Welcome to Two Book Minimum, where the days are growing long and the books seem to be growing longer too. I'm Monica Fumarello. Yes, it has been way too long since I did my last episode, but in fairness, these two books that I'm going to be talking about today were much longer than the first two books in the series. For those of you who missed my last episode, I talked about the first two books in the Lunar Chronicles called Cinder and Scarlet. And today I will be talking about the final two books in the series, Cress and Winter. Now, are there a couple other mini books in between slash at the end and a follow-up of some graphic novels? Sure, but that is for another podcast to deal with or address in their own time. For me, I'm just focusing on the main four books in this series. And boy, howdy, books three and four are very long, hence part of the reason that it took me so long to get to this episode. Also, just, you know, life happened in my non-podcasting world. I am a teacher. It is almost the end of the school year. So, you know, things have been a bit busy. But back to our main point of me being here. And also, I think it should go without saying, if I'm talking about books three and four in a series, spoilers abound for books one and two, and frankly for these ones as well. So don't say I didn't warn you. In Cress, the third book, which came out in 2014, we have an outcast among Lunars who should have been put to death as an infant because she doesn't have the gift to glamour others. Cress instead has spent the past 7 years alone in a satellite orbiting Earth. With only her net screens to keep her company, Queen Levana lets her live because she is the most talented hacker she has, and she has an ability for doing the awful woman's bidding on Earth, one keystroke and line of code at a time. Only Cress is not as loyal to the crown as people think. In fact, spying on Earthens all these years has made her sympathetic to them, and she's even been helping Cinder, Scarlet, Wolf, and her crush, Carswell Thorne. When a daring rescue mission goes awry, Cress gets her freedom, but the group is divided. Cress and Thorne are all alone on Earth, literally in the middle of nowhere. Scarlet is kidnapped and taken to Luna, and Cinder, a girl who has made her way as a mechanic and has always been able to fix things, has no idea how to make this right, but is determined not to let Levana destroy the world. Both of them. Thoughts. So I have read this book, I want to say at least two times, maybe three, before I went at it again earlier this year. And what I remembered from before, I remembered Cress's satellite, and I remember that it crashed to the Earth. I remember her spending time with and having a massive crush on Thorne, which is why I always associated him with this book and really totally blocked out the fact that he was such a main player in the previous book, Scarlet. I remembered that Dr. Erland, who first let Cinder know that she was a Lunar and the Lost Princess Selene, I remembered that he was Cress's father, and I remembered, again, spoiler, that he dies here. That was it. Several hundred pages, and I remembered vibes, but I didn't remember exact plot points. So when we're going to what I forgot, pretty much everything else. I totally missed out on Scarlet's kidnapping, Thorne going blind during the crash from the satellite to Earth, Kai being kidnapped at the end, which was, you know, for the best. Aiko getting a body. I knew she got an escort droid body at some point, but totally forgot when it happened. And that Jason, a Lunar guard, is spending time with the Rampian crew. So, needless to say, forgot quite a bit. The vibes of this book is just everything is hard. I remember loving this book, but somehow blocked out that it was 552 pages of our characters all feeling like they've hit rock bottom. And let me tell you, since I read the 827 pages following this of Winter, they haven't yet. They only think they have. Cinder is more accepting of the truth about being Princess Selene around this time, but that doesn't make it any less overwhelming. Scarlet is a prisoner, and Wolf is absolutely despondent. I don't want to say useless, but he's certainly not adding as much as he was before, because, you know, heartbreak. And Cress is having the shock of a lifetime every 5 minutes. Thaumaturge Sybil has a pilot. Then she's meeting Thorn. Then she's plummeting to Earth. Then the Sahara Desert, which is, you know, wildly different from anything she maybe could have imagined. Thorn being an absolute cad. She meets her father. She finds out he's dying. Her elaborate daydreams aren't enough to prepare anyone for this. And I felt her naivete more this time around. And I think that comes with me being older. But I also was able to come at it with grace and understanding that it's innocence. She has a huge heart. She is an identifiable and relatable character. And it is a full-bodied example of faking it till you make it. And also appreciating the wonders around us. I know Thorn, who has been faking it, he's also an example of fake it till you make it, except he's not making it, and he's not really fooling anybody except maybe himself. He's faking it, but he knows he's a fraud. He's faking it as a means of just like scraping by, where Cress is faking it in the hopes that it leads to something, that there is something bigger than herself. I think of the four books, this one I associate most with romance, because Cress is a hopeless romantic. And a lot of that is because she's been alone. She has no one to talk to. She interacts mostly with a recording of herself from when she was 10. That's like a game that she calls Little Cress to pretend there's someone else there. But she's fully aware it's a computer program. And so she has this massive crush on a guy who's not necessarily so deserving. And by the end, he knows it. She knows it. And this was the one that hit me hardest in my inner teenage feels, because I know it was identifiable to me to have the, you know, feelings for someone who, once that hindsight is gained, you're like, oh, this isn't right. This shouldn't be this way, but I can't help feel the way I feel. And it's devastating. It's like all encompassing. But I also love that Cress here, much like my teenage self, rises above it and knows that it's not the only thing on the table, that there is more in store and that she can do things. And I think that's awesome. So Cress, it was a couple hundred pages. And for the most part, the pacing was spot on. I was along for the ride. And we spent, I would say, most of our time between Cress and Cinder. Scarlet gets some page action, to be sure, but her time being kidnapped, it's certainly more limited, both in terms of the space she's allowed to occupy on Luna and within this novel. So liked it, glad I revisited it, definitely wasn't what I remembered. Take a short break, and when we come back, Winter, the final showdown. Okay, did I sound enough like a real radio person there? Because that's really all I want. Here we go. Okay, this one's going to be a little bit more convoluted because I did not write any notes for Winter, because at the magnum opus of 827 pages, it took me quite a while to reread this one, and I have thoughts. I'm not really going to do a plot summary because there's just way too much to cover, but I'm just going to jump in and say I liked it. I did. I think, though, I'm almost positive now, I only read this book once before, because there was a startling amount of stuff I did not remember, which makes sense. It came out in 2015, so 10 years. There's been a lot of books that I've read since then, and I liked it, but big caveat. I think it tied up the series well, but I also had the feeling, and I was talking to one of my library or readerly friends not so long ago, I almost feel like it could have been two books. Like, it should have been two books. There is so much happening here. You have Kai, who is now like temporarily part of the ramping crew, and he's now in on the plans of how they're going to try to stop things, how now he knows Cinder is the princess he's been looking for. You have Scarlet, who is still kidnapped. All this stuff goes on with Wolf, who is captured, and there is so much going on. Here we hit rock bottom. This is it. This is, in the first half of the book, the absolute lowest of the lows. And you have people who can't communicate. You have multiple times where characters think others are dead, and how are they going to survive, and how are they going to do this? You have Winter herself, who has been mentioned and alluded to before, but when you meet her, she is the leading lady who I kind of struggled with the most. And part of it is just, I think maybe just because we only get one book with her, so we don't get to see her as much. Like Cinder, I totally get. And even Scarlet, even though I can't identify with her a ton, like I understand her because we've spent so much time with her. Even Cress, we've gotten to get in her head pretty well. But Winter, it's a combination of she is suffering from lunar sickness as a result of refusing to use her gift, which I find absolutely noble, but there's also the side effects of her hallucinations. And there's that. There's the fact that she plays that up, and her aloofness and pretending to be naive to keep herself and her love, Jason, safe. But then you also have to wonder, well, how much of it is her actually playing it up, and how much of it is her actually being a little bit cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs? I mean, she is sweet and kind, but also just between different chapters, I was like, I don't know if you're putting on a front now or if you were before. I don't know. I felt like a lot of her was a charade, and I couldn't quite make sense of it. I mean, at the end, in the second half of the book, I felt like it was stronger, and maybe because she is separated from anyone who might immediately try to harm her. So she's just being herself to the people of Luna, and there she can be authentic. Whereas when she is with her aunt, stepmother, her evil stepmother, she is having to put on this front that I just was like, I can't tell when you're acting or not. Also, confession time, I couldn't really remember why Winter's story was Snow White. The Cinder and Scarlet and Cress, those allusions to their original fairy tales, super clear, very obvious. With Winter, I couldn't remember at all. Totally blocked out the fact that Jason was ordered to kill her, that he doesn't, that he helps her escape, that she ends up contracting the modified version or the evolved version of the plague and is in that, what is it? Container tank. Like stasis tank? I'm calling it the wrong thing. She's put into like hibernating goo to slow down the process, and then she gets the antidote or vaccine or whatever you want to call it, and then, you know, he kisses her. I totally, once we were getting rolling, I'm like, oh yeah, that's really why it was called Winter, but I couldn't remember why this was considered a Snow White retelling, and now we do. So, ultimately, I like how this story ends. I like this series, with the only caveat being, like, as much as I hate it when movies that are adapted from books do parts one and parts two, like, Winter really could have benefited from that. Just because maybe this was also just my reading experience. I was reading it on my old Nook from, like, the 2010s, and it was terrible in terms of trying to adjust the font size. So it was either very tiny or very big. It was not a pleasant reading experience. I wish I had a printed copy or on a different digital reading device. But anyway, I still think this series is great. I think the violence certainly amps up way more in books 2, 3, and 4. I mean, which makes sense. By the time we're in book 4, we are in a full-out war. But I still stand by what I said before. This is a great book that kind of bridges the gap between middle grade and young adult. And by the time you get into it, it is definitely a young adult series by the end. But again, there's like no egregious swearing or the violence. It is done as a result of wartime. It is clever. It is a really great way of taking these old stories and bringing new life into them. And I also think it's so smart that at the end, yeah, you have this group of girls and people, the Rampian crew, that they're friends, but there is no illusion that they're just gonna like hang out together forever. Like, no, they still have their own thing. Cinder and Kai, yeah, they have their budding romance here, but he is like, I'm the emperor, and she is now the queen of the moon. So they like deal with that, and Kress knows that she doesn't really have a place to go back to. And I like that none of them just, the happily ever after reflects the complications of real life, in that friends come together and have to go apart, and it's about staying in contact, and it's about what you value and what you believe in and the people you choose to be on your team. So am I glad I reread this series? Totally, absolutely. And I was going to say a but no, there's no but. I think maybe I should have reread it at a less busy time of year, and this episode would have gotten to you sooner. And also maybe as I am planning for future episodes, I don't know, maybe I'll just be looking at series that are trilogies or duets for a while. 4 felt like a big way to jump in. Maybe biting off a little bit more than I can chew for the, I don't know, 7 of you who listen, which I totally appreciate you. Don't get me wrong. Summer is coming, and hopefully I will get on the regularity train soon. So that is the Lunar Chronicles. Again, 2 thumbs up from me. I had thoughts, but again, I'm just one reader. So that is it for me for now. I am currently listening to The Lost Apothecary. I am currently reading The Listeners, and I am reading a collection of short stories also from Australia, whose title escapes me. But that's my to-read pile for now. May your to-read list never get shorter. And until next time, happy reading. Also, Kai and Queen Levana get married? How the heck did I forget that part? Okay, now I'm done.